Hello. Welcome back to the War Report. I'm sorry that we have not been on for the past 2 or 3 weeks and basically almost a month since we did our first episode on critical race theory. Well, there were problems with scheduling and et cetera, that preempted us. And so now, again, I guess I'm apologizing for not being on for the past couple weeks. And I hope to sort of like make up for that starting today. If you have seen our latest banner on Facebook, you'll know that we're going to be on every other week now, as opposed to every week that originally that I had planned. And we are going to be on for 4 new shows, starting with today's show, on an every other week basis. This would carry us into October. Also, this will take a lot of pressure off of me in terms of trying to cover critical race theory, what it is, what it isn't, why it's under attack, on and on and on, in 3 very short hours when there is just so much going on in this arena. And to be able to do the research, distill it, organize it, to be able to present it to you in some type of coherent fashion was a mega task. With this new format, every other week, over a longer period of time, I hope I'll be able to do what I consider justice to the issue of critical race theory and why it's under attack from so many orders. So with that, that's my apology. Oh, and I also want to start by saying a hearty thank you to the many, many, many people who wished me a happy birthday back on August the 20th. I was overwhelmed with your response to my birthday, the greetings and et cetera. It was well over 100, 150, something like that. Truly, I was very overwhelmed by your awareness and reaching out to me, what have you. And I've tried to get back to everyone with a thank you note and et cetera. Still in that process. Okay. Today, we're going to try and deal with the question of why is critical race theory an existential threat to so many people and organizations? Especially when you consider the 3 words, critical, race, theory. Critical in itself. It cracks me up because critical, which means expressing an adverse or disapproving comment or judgment, or expressing or involving analysis of the merit and faults of a work. We in education have embraced the critical paradigm over the last decade and a half as being the penultimate of what education should be like. We should educate our students to be critical thinkers and to be able to recognize, understand problems and be able to solve them through critical awareness and understanding. This has been the gold standard for at least the last decade. We have critical everything, critical psychology, critical religious studies, critical sociology, critical literature, critical politics, critical analysis of history, on and on and on. Critical teaching, the critical methodology has become, quote, the gold standard, both in pre-K to 12, as well as college, all the way up to the PhD, to produce critical thinkers who will be able to look at, understand, and work hard to solve critical problems, be it critical social problems, now critical climate problems. Critical has been the gold standard. So that word in critical race theory, you can't be upset with that word. Let's jump over to theory. Theory is a supposition or a system of ideas intended to explain something. You have a theory of why X, Y, Z is happening or is going to happen. You have a theory. It's especially one based on general principles of independent things that are not related to the thing that you're theorizing about. Okay, that's science, social science jargon, more or less. But we always dealt with theory. So we've always dealt with critical. And now critical theory, critical studies is the gold standard. So what is it that makes so many, quote, people, states, pissed off with critical race theory? Obviously, it has to be race. It has to be race because race has been the critical issue in this country ever since 1619, when the first ship of, quote, slaves were dropped off here in continental United States. So there's another idea, too, that I want to get at this point. Remember your history. When the first, quote, Europeans discovered as if it was lost, this continent, and when they encountered the indigenous or the native population, and we always think about Columbus, what did they do? They took the first step onto the shores off of their boats, planted their flag, and proclaimed the land for the king or queen that sent them on their voyage. Screw or forget about the indigenous population. This is now our country, the English or the Spanish, etc. They proceed to seek to establish their presence. And I'm speaking now strictly here of what is now the continental U.S. They have to deal with the natives. That end up into major conflicts that would last for decades into decades into decades. It is estimated that when the first Europeans landed on the shores of now present USA, there were 30 million Native Americans. At the end of the campaign to eradicate Native Americans and to claim what is now continental USA, under the, you remember, Manifest Destiny, you're from your history, from sea to shiny sea, from the East Coast to the West Coast, would be all United States of America. When they being the people who did the march from the East Coast to the West, eliminating the Native population of 30 million, when that campaign was over, it was estimated there was only 5 million Native Americans left that was put on the reservations out in the flats of Utah and you name it. That whole process is history. Like bringing the Africans to this country and putting them into the first 25, 27, whatever that number was, we can't know for sure, were not slaves per se. They were indentured servants. One person who bought, quote, a slave, registered that person as a slave. It would take decades later for this country to declare that the Africans were slaves and slaves for life, and that the mother who gave birth to children would be a slave, and so would her offspring be a slave. Now, what does that have to do with critical race theory? It's the race part of the critical race theory. How this country has dealt with race and how race has become defined in terms of whiteness, blackness, brownness, and other hues of color or people who have come to this country over the last 400 plus years. This, I believe, and again, this is, quote, if you want to call it my theory, my take on this, of why critical race theory is now the boogeyman here in 2021 that it is, and how it came about in 2020 as the bone of contention that will divide this country even more so than what it is now, because race is coming back to take its position as the number one threat to whiteness. Now, I said a lot in that introduction, that critical race theory, when you break it down, as I just tried to do, the critical part and the theory part are not the thing that is the boogeyman right now. It's the race part. It's us dealing with what has been an issue for over 400 years. I want to take you through what this critical dimension, the whole notion of critical thinking. we being humanity has always had a problem with what we now call critical thinking, critical theory. I want to take you back to 333 BC. Yeah, I was there then. I know what you're thinking. I was there. Imagine this. There was this guy walking around the big city, dressed in his sandals and his white robe, more or less. And every day he would meet with a group of young men, and he would be teaching them history. He would be teaching them what we now call philosophy. He would be raising issues of the day, political issues, social issues. He was trying to create what we would now refer to as critical awareness and understanding of their society, their country, civilization. This guy, very popular, one of the wisest people of his time, he was arrested. He was tried. His crime was the moral corruption of the nation's youth and the disrespect of the gods, the many, many, many gods that were recognized and worshipped. For these crimes, the penalty was death. He was put in prison. He was basically kind of like offered an opportunity to escape, go someplace else, as opposed to staying there and die. He opted to stay and die in defense of his ideas, his teaching, and he did. He was killed. He was executed. Hemlock. You know who I'm talking about. No, we call him Sock. You call him Socrates. Socrates was introducing what I'm going to, and I don't think this is a stretch, critical race theory for his time. It scared the shit out of the powers to be. It threatened their overall religion, their social structure, and that if his ideas, if his teaching was accepted by a larger and larger and larger youth population, what that would do to that society. He became an existential threat, and he was executed for that. Yep, Sock paid a price for his ideas, his vision, etc. Let's fast forward to the early 1900s. There was a guy, a teacher, by the way. So we're talking about a second teacher. There was a guy, a teacher, who was teaching students that humanity, as we know it, came out of the sea and evolved over centuries to the humanoid that we are. Thank you, but you know where I'm going.
this was against the prevailing view that there was a God who created Adam and then created Eve from the rib of Adam. And that was the beginning of humankind on planet Earth. That teacher was arrested, charged, almost like Socrates, in terms of corrupting the morality of the youth and disparaging, disrespecting, what have you, the notion of the creation. You know what I'm talking about, the Skunk Monkey trial. Fortunately, the jury found the person to be not guilty of this moral corruption, and that the science prevailed over, I guess in this case, I'll just say religious creation theory. So we have these two examples that I'm using as critical race theory of its day was so damn disruptive that it created a fear, and I call it exactly what it is, a fear that would challenge the status quo of the period. Again, these two people, their idea, I'm looking at them as precursors to this whole notion of critical theory, critical thinking, and the power of critical thinking as a tool. As a tool to teach our students how to recognize problems through critical thinking, and then the skills that can go along with or accompany the thinking part that will allow them to identify problems and solutions for those problems. Two parts here. Identify a problem and seek a solution. This is what Socrates was doing. This is what the Skunk Monkey trial was all about. This is what I think is happening today. You heard that expression, history repeats itself. Well, this is what's happening. I think critical race theory, on the one hand, is viewed like Socrates was teaching and like the Skunk Monkey trial was teaching, ideas that challenge the prevailing status quo, ideas that if they grew and spread could lead to not only a challenge to the status quo, but a changing of the status quo. In the status quo, whatever that status quo is the power to maintain, protect, perpetuate the status quo, be an idea, a set of practice, and et cetera. So critical race theory, on the one hand, is viewed as a hell of a potential power ideology, set of ideas, a critique of the status quo, and a challenge to the status quo. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, critical race theory is the boogeyman, the whipping boy that politicians, the Republican politician, is using as a tool to create fear and the reaction to that fear in the form of voting to make sure that critical race theory is not taught in schools, make sure critical race theory is not used in government policies and practices, make sure that critical race theory is not embraced by the corporate structure, so that the status quo, whatever it is at the time, will be protected, will be maintained, and will be perpetuated in the future. Now, this is what I mean by critical race theory as an existential threat to so many people. It is the most, probably, I won't say the most, one of the best whipping boy, boogeyman tools that the establishment, the Republican establishment, could use. As I said in our first show, it's a tool that once it was put out there as this is a threat, a danger to the raising of our children, just like Socrates was doing in Athens and his teaching, that will make our children feel guilty about our past and the role that whiteness had played in the building of this country, and that they bear responsibility, an inherited responsibility. And as a result of that, and the feeling guilty, they would be much more susceptible to change that will destroy the prevailing status quo that has been the mantra of this country for over 400 years. So, that's what I mean by when I talk about critical race theory as an existential threat to so many people, on why it is an existential threat. That's my argument. That's my conclusion of what critical race theory is to certain people and how they are using it to become a wedge issue in politics. We call it a wedge issue that will divide people as opposed to bringing people together to work out problems and solve problems in an amicable way. Now, I have said in last week, or not the last week, our first show, but even before that, our shows in 2014, 15, 16, 17, 18, I talked often about this idea that there was a possibility of major, major social change coming about. And I talked about how in 2008, every day I was starting to read just a little blurb about 2044-48. That was the time when it was expected America would have a major change. The white population would no longer be the majority population. They would become the minority population, whereas the minority population of Hispanic, Black, Asian, and other ethnicities or groups would become the majority. They would be 50.5%, 51% of the population. With that change, in theory, the minority population could elect all the presidents going forward. They could elect on the national level, or actually state level, their state representatives to go to Congress, to go to the Senate. This would be a titanic shift of power away from the white majority to the new minority majority. I talked about that quite often. And I talked about it in the context of why in 2008 I saw the little announcement, I mean, it was maybe a paragraph or two, about the coming change in America's population from 40 years out. My first reaction was, I don't give a damn. I won't be alive then. But then, as I began to see this little blurb in newspaper, and then on television, et cetera. And then the question, like, why are we talking about this now, some 40 years down the line? And then it hit me. What they were saying is that, my interpretation was that Obama is a Black man who's on the verge of becoming the president of the United States. And he is going to do this while we have the majority, the white majority. What do you think will happen when minorities have the majority? If we let a Black man be elected while we have the majority, what the hell do you think is going to happen when the others, have the majority? That blew my mind back then when I came to that realization. I see what's happening today, the war on critical race theory, on voter suppression, on gender ID in schools, as, again, a last stand to prevent losing power from the majority to minority here in 21, 22. And as I said in the first show, losing in Georgia two Senate seats from Republicans to Democrats sent this huge shockwave across the landscape of America. And you can see the reaction in banning critical race theory and, 22, 23, it's changing every day. States, you can see where state legislatures and governors are stepping in and taking control from school boards to pass legislation banning critical race theory or defining what can be taught about U.S. history and almost how, seizing curriculum, which is the thing. And you can see what's happening to school boards across this country. Meetings, school board meetings are turning into war zones. Republican pontiffs are urging their people to run for school board, to take control of school boards, thus being able to take control of curriculum, thus being able to make sure that white children of today will not learn, know of the history, the true history, the complete history of this country and whiteness. You may disagree with that, but that is my take. That is what I meant when I said, why is critical race theory an existential threat to so many people? It is the power of critical race theory, like other critical theories, to bring about awareness, understanding, you know the paradigm, emotional engagement, all three of which can lead to individual and collective social action for social change. Use critical race theory and other concepts now to hold off for as long as possible the minority becoming the majority with the power to change the social structure that has been in existence for over 400 years. That's what I was alluding to in this statement of why is critical race theory an existential threat to so many people. The hidden agenda is what I just laid out. I truly believe 2044, by the way, 2044 is the estimate coming from the latest 2020 statistics survey of, you know, our population survey that takes place every 10 years, that it's now projected that it's 2044, not 48, that will be the turning point. That's, folks, that's just a 20 plus years. okay, 22, 23 years from now. This is ominous. This is threatening. And the Republicans chose the right strategy. As I said in that first show, you go after the schools. The school is where your pre-K to 12th grade, your three-year-olds to your 18-year-olds are. The schools are where the parents will take to the streets, go to war to protect their children, and in this case, protect them from being indoctrinated that whiteness is not all it has been cracked up to be. That whiteness has committed horrendous genocide, suppression, et cetera, for centuries. And that, as the anti-critical race theory people say, and that today's children in schools should or would become people who feel guilty about, well, what was that expression? The sins of the father visited on the sins of the son? That this could happen. Now, that's me theorizing. But when I look at not only critical race theory being this existential threat, and as I just said, when you look at voter suppression, when you look at the attack on gender identity in our schools, when you look at, to wear a mask or not wear a mask. I'm going to do probably the last show that's going to be on this mask, anti-mask thing. I'm going to tell you right here, right now, that show, you're going to see a different side of me that you've never witnessed. I don't understand it. I am so blanking pissed off about it that I don't know, my objectivity is at stake here. But anyway, that's for coming down the line. So we're back to critical race theory. Here is another dimension. I've only alluded to it. Is that I have talked about how through the centuries, socialization of the youth to the prevailing values of the society, of the community, has moved from the religious order to the family, to the school, and now to a considerable extent, social media, but the school as primary socialization, center for socialization of the youth. Again, critical race theory, gender identity, potential voter suppression, and especially voter suppression of the youth, against voter suppression, against changing the national voting age from 18 to 17 to 16. All of these areas of contention spring from this fear that we see that is brought on by critical race theory. And I'm going to say it again. Critical race theory itself is just that, a theory. It's a proposition. It's a set of ideas, arguments, that in itself shine a bright light on the social structure, and the policies, the practices, the processes that come from that structure. I'll say it again. Critical race theory, like all of critical studies, dives into a deep analysis of the social structure, examining the processes, the laws, the policies, the norms, the values that emanate from a given social structure. And by shining a light on that facet, it, in a sense, is ridiculing the social structure and its processes. That's a sociological term that we call social functionalism. How a given social structure will dictate the functions of that structure, what that structure is designed to do, how it is to function. In this case, structural functionalism talks about, and in race, it talks about how racism itself is the driving force behind the social structure of American history, politics, culture for the last 400 years. It is, I think, it is this recognition of the true function of a society's social structure, how it is built, what it is built on, how it operates, is what also makes so many people frightened about critical race theory. Because critical race theory says that racism is structural. Racism, it's not an individual prejudice or choice, and that if you take it as an individual prejudice, an individual choice, your solution would be to deal with it, deal with individual biases, deal with racism as an individual, and come up with programs, policies, practice to deal with the individual. And society needs to enforce a moral code against individuals who, quote, violate this moral code in terms of, you know, imprisonment or what have you. It's racism, an individual issue phenomena. Critical race theory says, hell no, it's structural. And that's just why it has lasted as long as it has. You remember, I want to throw out a thing last week. Remember the first show? I talked about how critical race theory, quote, came into being in the mid, late 1970s and officially in the early 1980s. It was a group of law professors who were disenchanted with the lack of progress, I should say, and bringing about a change in the systemic structure of racism in this country. There was such a high expectation that the Supreme Court decision, the 1954 decision, Brown versus the Board of Education, that the Supreme Court ruled that segregation was so detrimental to children that it was unconstitutional. And hence, segregation had to be dismantled by all deliberate speed. That was 1954. 1977, late 70s, the lawyers, law professors were disenchanted over the fact that there had been so little progress. And hence, a guy who was one of the lead theorists of this issue started, quote, you want to call it criticizing? Derek, that was his first name. He and a group of other law professors started this thing called critical race theory, where they were examining racism, race and racism here in America, and why it has been the way it had been for 400 years, and that it was not an individual prejudice. It was a societal, it was a cultural, it was a structure, endemic, systemic racism was a social structure phenomenon. And that the phenomena was basically, again, the maintenance, protection, and perpetuation of whiteness. That was what our social structure was built on. That was a major challenge, folks. But it was quiet. It grew in acceptance the college, university level. It grew even more so after the racial, violent, social protest movement of the late 50s into the 60s, well into the 60s, almost up until the beginning of the 70s, that colleges and universities took notice Up until then, the professor at Harvard, who is considered the father of critical race theory, was the only black professor at Harvard. Across the country, universities, the top universities, some of them had zero black professors, period. And even graduate students, they intentionally did not admit any large number of black students in the graduate program, and they intentionally did not go out and hire black professors university-wide. And this is what the people who started the critical race theory was observing, was pissed off about, and wanted to bring awareness to the issue. That's how critical race theory started. And I'm going to tell you, it had a hell of an impact. In the 70s, universities, colleges across this country was working their asses off to find black professors, and to some extent, Hispanic professors. But it was black professors that they were working their tails off to bring into the university, in all departments, all schools. I know about that because I was part of that impact of critical race theory had on the university, because I was hired as a professor during that period of time. My time is up now, but one of the things of having the disruption that we've had over the last month about being able to do weekly versus biweekly and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We have four shows, and this is the first of those four shows. I will have much more time to dig into, as I said earlier, this critical race theory war and its meaning and et cetera. And next show, I will pick up where we are leaving off now in terms of the impact of critical race theory and how it came about on education, and particularly at the university level, at the college level, and how it filtered down into the grades, the hiring of black men, where, and when I grew up in school, there wasn't a single black male teacher from kindergarten to 12th grade. I had two black male subs doing my grades. In college, I had one black professor who was a part-time teaching evening courses. So I'll get more into this on our next show. Again, I apologize for the confusion that has led to us not being on for the last 3 weeks or more. And again, I'll say thank you to all the people who took the time to send me beautiful birthday greetings. With that, our time is up. See you in 2 weeks. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. I don't know what's up there.
beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come.